Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple. Today, our best of show about taxes. Some of you are like, ugh, I can think of nothing worse. Some of you are like, let's geek out, man. Tax laws in this country treat different demographics differently, right? Sometimes for good reason, sometimes really, really not. So there is new advocacy work underway that focuses on single seniors. And we're going to talk to an advocacy group that is trying to argue or advocate for some policy changes and certainly to raise awareness for inequities they feel occur, that they feel single seniors face. Jane Robertson is the founder of the group. She's here to tell us about it. And a company that helps find unclaimed tax deductions and tax credits and all that sort of stuff. It's called Family Tax Recovery. And it provides an in-depth analysis of your tax returns from years past. President and CEO Stan Soley is going to take us through how it works and how much you'll pay for it, because you'll pay, but it could well be worth it. Then Canada's taxpayers ombudsman, Francois Boileau, he's here to tell us exactly what his office does. I hadn't even heard of it. So really interesting to hear about how they're focused on improving the services of the Canada Revenue Agency. And filing taxes when you have a side hustle or are self-employed. A little different than when you work for a large company and it's just, you know, withdrawn at source. You get a T4, you're all good. Chartered professional accountant Dean Paley is going to talk about the process and some of the pitfalls. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. Tax season is probably not something you're looking forward to unless maybe you're an accountant and this is your true passion. But for single seniors, paying taxes can be an even bigger frustration for a whole bunch of reasons. Single Seniors for Tax Fairness is a Canadian advocacy group that is looking to address the inequities it says this demographic faces. Jane Robertson is the founder of the group. She joins us now to tell us more. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce.
You yourself are a single senior and you've been retired for some time?
Retired at 62 and I'm now 85. So that's okay. A lot of retirement years.
You're an experienced retiree.
Yeah, that's right.
How do you define senior singles?
All right. Our group encompasses everybody who does not have a life partner who is over 65. So that includes widows, widowers, lifelong singles like me. That's my state. Divorcees and people who are separated.
And let's talk about some of the examples here about the circumstance that you find yourselves in versus the circumstance for someone who is still coupled.
Yes.
What are some examples?
The first case in our documents really says it all. A woman who has pension income of $115,000, and she gets most of her OAS clawed back because that it's such a hefty income that she's got. And she goes to her financial planner and says, what can I do about getting more OAS? And he says, nothing. You're single. You have no flexibility at all. And then he says, just out of interest, let's pretend you had a partner. And that $115,000 was coming into the household. And it was the only income for the household. That means you and your partner will each declare incomes of $57,500. So half of the $115,000. As a result of that, you each qualify for full OAS, old age security payments, which means in the vicinity of $8,000 each. Plus, you will have the benefit of age credit because you will each declare less than $90,000. So that's another couple of thousand dollars or one and a half or so. And also, you will pay much less tax. You will pay exactly $21,000 less tax than this single woman is currently paying. So that is a portrait of the inequities that exist in terms of finances and taxes.
And you flag the other dynamic that a single person does not have half the expenses. It's right. You say two-thirds, but it's certainly mm-hmm. not half. The uh-huh. other variable you highlight is homeownership. How does right. that link to a single senior? Because as I read it, I think of that being certainly an issue, but an issue distinct from whether you are coupled or not.
You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. I have a ton of single friends who are in the vicinity of my age, and I think every one of them owns a home. Mm. I think I'm the only one who is a lifelong renter because, to be honest, I've never wanted a home particularly. I mean, I've always been alone, which is not an ideal situation, but why would I want 10 rooms to walk around in instead of three or four? But that is a whole separate issue. What we use the idea of home ownership for is a comparison point, because we do say the people who own homes have a whack of money that they have an asset that is totally tax-free, whereas I am penalized because I don't have a home. The only tax-free asset I have is a TFSA. Whereas the homeowner has this fabulous increase by thousands every year, plus, and sometimes that's millions, plus their own tax-free assets.
We know when we look at the mortality tables that it is more likely that you will be a single senior female, because yes. women tend to last longer than men.
Right.
Your website and your material doesn't really put a fine point on the gender dynamic at play here, but I think it's important that we talk about it. How okay. do you see gender coming into play here? Because we know that in their working years, a woman working alongside men for generations would have earned 80 cents, 60 cents, whatever the number is, on the dollar versus a male peer.
Well, to be honest, we like to treat men and women equally when it comes to the position of seniors. You're absolutely right. By the time you get up into the senior category, sort of 70s and 80s, there are double the number of single seniors, single female seniors than men in that stage, because men do die earlier. But, you know, we just don't want to make a distinction here. I think maybe we would get further with the government, because the government is very much pro-female, and which is fine. But, you know, I think there's a big case to be made for men. All you have to do is look at the homeless population. There aren't too many women in the streets compared to the number of men, et cetera. Anyway, yes, you're right.
I think it's an important dynamic, because one of the other case studies you had was Susan and Jill. Susan was married, then yes. bought a house. Jill did not marry. She did not buy a house. She ran a small business, but she Jill did work. She could have bought a house. She didn't, but she could yeah. have.
Yes.
And she didn't have the expense of raising the kids that Susan and her then husband had. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the challenges is, where do the demographics end and the choices begin? Because Jill uh-huh. made some choices.
She did. And Jill, it just so happens, a sideline to that is that Jill, although she has no children of her own, is very much attached to three nieces and a nephew, two nieces and a nephew, three of them, children of an immigrant mother who came from the poorest of the poor in one of the Caribbean countries, had never had a day of schooling, she arrived here signing her name with an X. Mm. She couldn't even write her own name. Mm. So Jill, that's where Jill's money has gone. She has supported that family. She made a down payment on a house for them. She sent the kids to camp. They lost the house because of the marriage situation that they were in. So Jill has been paying rent. And prior to that, she paid mortgage fees. She sent the kids to camp. She helped pay for their tuition in community college. They're all in their late 20s, right. early 30s now, and big successes on their way to a nice middle-class life. They're not going to, I mean, and she sent them to camp. She sent them, took them to ski lessons. And Jill is very happy that that's how she did spend her money.
Single Seniors for Tax Fairness is the name of your group. We just have a minute or two left. What is the call to action here? Who are you trying to influence and what do you want them to do?
Okay, well, the ultimate call to action is directed towards the government, the federal government, whom we want to give equal rights to. The government gives so many pluses, like income splitting, to, and also the other thing is transfer of portfolios like TFSAs and RIFs and so forth. There are major benefits to being a couple. And once those people lose a partner, that's when they awaken to the fact that their tax bill is going to be horrendous. They can't pass on their RIF payments to a family member, et cetera, et cetera. Their RIF portfolio, I should say. So all we're asking for, since the government is so reluctant always to withdraw all the benefits it gives to certain groups, all what we're asking for is equality. It is the, why are we, without a partner, being penalized because we don't have a partner? Because that's really the bottom line of the whole argument, of the whole situation.
I understand where you're coming from, Jane, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come and let us know about the work that you are doing on this front.
Well, thank you very much, Bruce.
Jane Robertson is the founder of a group called Single Seniors for Tax Fairness, and their mission is to try and eventually and over time lead to changes in the way taxes are handled in this country.
Coming up next, a company that helps you find unclaimed tax deductions. It's called Family Tax Recovery, and they do this really in-depth analysis of your tax returns from the last couple of years, and they claim they promise to find you more money. We'll talk to the president and CEO of the company. He'll take us through how it works and how you're going to pay for it, because of course you have to pay for it later. Filing taxes when you have a side hustle or you're self-employed, it's different than would they just withdraw the tax at source. We'll talk to chartered professional accountant Dean Paley about how all that works.
And if you have missed an episode of Moolala, don't worry. Just head on over to moolala.ca. You can look at full episodes. You can look at topics. Well, you can look at them and then listen to them if you would like. You can also go to the podcast platforms directly, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Music. And while you are there, subscribe. You just subscribe. And then, you know, when you're like, what should I listen to today? You'll see in your phone, in your library, there are episodes right there at the ready for you.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. Do you have this thought, this suspicion, this question that maybe, just maybe, you are missing out on some tax credits or deductions from your previous returns? One company looks to help you get those refunds for a fee. It is called Family Tax Recovery. And today we're going to talk to its president and CEO about how it all works. Stan Simoli joins us from Toronto. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, this does have a bit of feels too good to be true about it, right? Like you sign on to your website and then you find magic money and drop it into one's bank account. I am oversimplifying here, but tell us, how does family tax recovery work?
You're really not oversimplifying. You know, most people aren't aware. In fact, most accountants aren't aware that Canada's CRA allows taxpayers to go back and adjust their taxes for 10 years. It's the only country in the world that does that, as far as I know. So what we do is we go back 10 years and after doing some homework with our clients, we find out they forgot to take medical expenses 4 years ago, or they didn't know that you can charge tuition credits. They didn't know that if you're taking care of your parents, you can possibly get the caregiver credit, and so on and so on.
How do you do this sort of work at scale? Because I can imagine a super keen accountant who asks 14,000 questions and has done 14,000 returns in their career, they might get to it, but that can't be a profitable model. So how do you make it more efficient?
Very good. When we first started, I had a room full of accountants, and an accountant can do a personal tax review in about 2 or 3 hours. So they can get maybe 2 or 3 done a day. So we've replaced those accountants with automation. And with automation, you can do hundreds and hundreds of them.
What are the sort of questions that you would ask me as the client that would flag, you know, those medical expenses or the parent care or whatever?
Well, what we do is when people sign up, we have them fill out a rather lengthy questionnaire. And this questionnaire will help us identify whether or not there may be a refund or a credit available to them.
So they fill out this questionnaire and then tell me what happens next in the process.
Then the computers go to work and they know what to look for. Because really, you know, we've been doing this now since 2015. We've gotten around 25,000 refunds, so we know what to look for. And we know what the typical refund comes to and comes from.
Right. You ask, because I went to your website, you ask for a name and a phone number right away. The second question, though, on the second screen, you ask for the social insurance number. That felt a little forward. I kind of like drinks and dinner first. Why so fast?
It's funny you should say that, because people sign up online two ways. One is online through social media, and the other way is through our corporate partners. So when it comes to signing up online, what we find is people that are well off, they're not going to put that social insurance number in there. And not only that, they're scared of a tax review. Mm. I don't want to open a can of worms. I don't want to get audited. Everybody was born and raised to be afraid of the tax man. Mm. But the people that are lower income and are hurting for money and are desperate, they don't care if they give you your social insurance number. If there's a chance I'm going to get a refund, where do I sign? And so through social media, we find that we're helping a lot of lower income folks. It's more than 60% of our business.
And well, it is one of the things that lower income people don't realize is that even if you don't have a lot of income, you can qualify for a whole bunch of deductions and credits.
So absolutely true. And because we don't charge any upfront fees, everybody can afford to do it.
I want to talk about the fees. So the average refund you say your clients receive is $3,000. And what is your piece of that? How do you charge for that?
We charge 33% of whatever the refund is. And there's a sliding scale down to 10% for the larger, very large refunds.
And where does that scale kick in? What's the break point?
20,000, then 50,000, I think it is. We find that the typical refund is $200, $500, $600. But then several times a day, we'll get somebody who has a $15,000 refund that scales, that makes the average go way up.
Do you ring a bell? Do you ring a bell when that happens?
No, we don't ring a bell, but now, we're very happy.
Once you're a client, it says your service will continue to search for new refund opportunities each new tax year. How does that work?
Automatically. Once you give us permission to represent, just like you give permission to your accountant, if you have one, to access your information at CRA, you give us that same kind of permission. And then every year we go in and see if there's anything else that's been missed.
How can I revoke that permission?
You click a box on a document and then it's automatically revoked at that junction.
I understand the value to the client. I really do. The question that I have is the cost payoff, the 33%. How do you justify that?
Well, first of all, I would say about, as I mentioned before, 80 to 90% of the refunds come in at $200 or $300, $500. So we're losing money in every one of those. And I'll tell you this. Let me ask you this question. If I went on a treasure hunt for your family to find money and I'm digging in the ground, would you let me keep a third of it if I found you money?
I don't know that I would, but that depends if you put the dirt back together and, you know, fix the sod over top of it, I think. It's a good question. And I would bet different humans have a different threshold, right? For what that percent, what feels fair about that perception, that percentage.
You have to have a comparable. There's nobody doing 10-year tax reviews. And this is money that belongs to the people, but it's gone forever if you don't go get it.
You have a number of affiliate offers, which in this day and age is how the world works, all of them linked to Loans Canada. Do you own that site? How does that relationship work?
No, that's just actually one of our affiliate partners. We work with financial service companies. We work with lead generation companies, with employers. We're talking to unions now. We work with charitable organizations. Look, there's 30 million taxpayers in this country, and there's about $30 billion over at the CRA waiting for people to claim it.
I'm sure you're banking on a potential client who has a reasonable probability that there's a refund available to them. Some humans, though, may realize, oops, that's the wrong direction. What happens if after that work, you identify that actually the client owes CRA more?
We're very silent in a case like that. It's never happened.
Really, hey?
No, because we're going in to look at taxes that have already been filed. We're not refiling taxes. We're only changing one line on the taxes that have been already filed. And that line is changed if a refund is created. That's what we do.
Very interesting stuff. All right. So there's going to be a portion of people who are like, that sounds great. There are a portion of people who are like, I will do that myself. What is the single biggest tip you would have for people who don't have artificial intelligence at the ready for them to do this work themselves? And I take the asterisk. I know you're going to tell me they can't do this work for themselves, but if they could, what would you have them look at first?
If they could. The reason they can't is because the government makes, have you ever seen the tax code? It's a combination of Greek and math.
Yeah, and I read it every night before I go to bed. You kidding? Of course.
So it's very difficult for people, but you can buy tax software that can help. You can meet with an accountant to discuss it. An accountant would charge an arm and a leg to do a 10-year tax review, but you can meet with an accountant to get ideas. And there's tons of information online of the kind of things that are available to Canadian taxpayers. There are many credit programs federally and provincially. And that information is public.
One last question before we go. The thing that I see a lot is people who may well qualify for the disability tax credit based on their circumstances, but that's not easy to get. And there's a bunch of paperwork that you need to do. How do you handle that one in particular?
We don't really focus on disability tax credits. There are companies that do focus on that.
Yeah.
It's quite a process because you have to deal with doctors and you have to get all kinds of documents signed. But it's certainly worth going after. And again, for people with disabilities who want to do it themselves, there's tons of information available online on how to do it. And the CRA also tries to help, knowing that it's quite a difficult process.
Very interesting stuff. Stan, thank you for joining us today.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Stan Simoli is the president and CEO at Family Tax Recovery. And we were talking about its service to go back into the past and see if it can goose your refund.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, not everybody has a job where income tax is withdrawn at source. There are a lot of people out there who are either fully self-employed or they got a side hustle. We've got some tips on how to manage your taxes if that's your situation. Chartered professional accountant Dean Paley is here. But first, Canada's Taxpayers Ombudsman, François Boileau, is here to talk about what his office does and how they might be able to help you with questions and concerns you have with the CRA.
To stay up to date for all things Moolala, you can sign up to our newsletter. Very simple. How it works is once a month, we gather stuff that we do in lots of areas. This show on SiriusXM, BNN Bloomberg, you know, the Toronto Star, the Globe, CBC Radio, wherever it is, it all comes together in that newsletter. So, you know, you get to see what's out there.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Welcome back. Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest-standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit. As I said, the counseling is free and judgment free. You know, I don't know a lot of people who love filing their taxes, but for a lot of people in this country, it's not as simple as love and hate when it comes to filing their taxes. There are actual real systemic barriers that prevent some Canadians from getting that work done. And that matters because they could be missing out on benefits, on tax credits. It's a really important thing. So we're going to talk about these issues and ways that government and nonprofits and all those interested in helping vulnerable Canadians can make a difference to this group of folks. François Boileau is Canada's Taxpayers Ombudsperson, and he joins us now. Hello there.
Yes, hello. Glad when to be you with say, you again.
Well, thank you so much for returning. When you talk about vulnerable Canadians, give us a flavor for people who are in that category as you see it.
Actually, there are more than 850,000 people that are non-filers. So what does it mean? It means that, as you just said in your intro, it means that not only they don't file, but they don't get the benefit that they could be entitled to. So they're not all in the Pandora papers, right? Mm. So it's it can be very eclectic. We are talking about seniors, housing insecure individuals, Indigenous peoples, modest income individuals, newcomers as well, person with disabilities, students. There's a whole wide range of people that fit into the vulnerable population category. Mm. But how to address them, we need to have different strategies in terms to not only regionally, because the difference it could be quite different from, say, Toronto, the suburbs of Toronto, within communities, Mandarin, Punjabi, that speaks that language, and Regina, which is completely different, and northern residents as well. So
sure,
CRA needs to be on cue on these differences and address them in a way that will actually make a difference.
What are the most common reasons? And I know you've just said it's a whole bunch of different people with different circumstances, but if you were to simplify or summarize, what are some of the most common reasons why they don't file their taxes?
And this is really to summarize, because it could be a wide variety again, but the most common would be the complexity of filing and not so much benefit for the work that is that you have to put through filing. So that's why there are so many new initiatives from CRA to simplify. We're talking about simplify forms. We're talking about the Community Volunteer Income Tax Program, the CVITP, that helps individuals to actually with professionals that will help them to file. Is people, they don't see the relevance of putting that much work, and because they don't see it. But it has tremendous impact. It's not only the benefits from the federal program, federal government, but it can also be, filing is usually used by provincial government and some municipal government as well. So if you're missing out, you're missing out not only on federal benefits, but perhaps provincial ones as well.
And I can understand where the confusion would lie, because I think a lot of people would say, geez, I've earned some money, and if I file my taxes, I'm going to have to pay more. And what you're saying is, in fact, you might not have to pay more. You might get more back from taking that.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And make it being eligible. Can you give us an example of benefits or credits that are triggered by a tax filing?
Well, the most common would certainly be the CCB, the Canada Child Benefit. If you don't file, you don't get the CCB. And with many, actual millions of families, they depend on the CCB each and every month to in order to survive and to pay their houses, apartments. So CCB is certainly one that is extremely important. Another one would be the GST, HST credit. Or the GIS, what's the name for GIS?
Guaranteed Income Supplement?
That's correct. Thank you.
Woo! So, 100 points for Bruce. Tell us about the Community Volunteer Income Tax Program, because this is one way in which the CRA and your office can get their tentacles out to more humans who could use this support.
Well, the CVITP program, so the Community Volunteer Income Tax Program, it's volunteer organizations that complete tax returns for eligible individuals. It's free of charge, of course. And it's to ensure that they receive or continue to receive the benefit payments that they are entitled to. And some, you have to be an eligible individual, but if you're, you know, indigenous, 65 years old and older, modest income, as I said earlier on, you can have access to those free volunteer organizations. And there's a list of, they try to make themselves known, and it's been quite a challenge over the last few, the last 2 years because of COVID. They couldn't go in and help people. For instance, usually or before the pandemic, they could go into retirement homes and do the filing over there with the people. But now, over the last year, they were able only to send portables. But still, who will actually put the numbers down? So,
how does one become a volunteer? What does it take to become a volunteer?
If you know the system a little bit, it doesn't have to be a rocket like a NASA scientist. You know how to do your own returns, and we're talking about people that have simple issues. We're not talking about complexity. They can charge their own staff to do their returns for them. But if it's simple enough, you go there and you offer your services. There are many students and that they go into these organizations, and there's a list that you can find on the CRA website as well, and type in CVITP and do the research, and you're in.
There has been so much work over the last couple of decades on behavioral science, and in particular on pensions. One of the big insights is instead of getting people to sign up for a company pension, for example, you just auto-enroll them. You assume that they're enrolled. Can't we apply that thinking here? Because so many of the demographic groups that you've talked about have some relationship with various programs. They probably have social insurance numbers. Couldn't they just be auto-enrolled such that, they didn't have to file their taxes, that they were done automatically?
It's funny you should mention that, because listen to this. So in the prime minister, the current prime minister in 2015 and 2010, asked the Minister of National Revenue to do this, proactively contact Canadians who aren't entitled to but are not receiving tax benefit. But in 2021, the Prime Minister asked the Minister to work with stakeholders and community organizations to continue to develop and implement free automatic tax filing services for simple returns to ensure Canadians receive the benefits that they need. So this is a priority now directly from the Prime Minister to the Minister of National Revenue, and they have already had some, it's still not yet widespread. So there's a, how do you say that, projects. It's like,
right.
So there's a file my return. So it's something that you can free automated phone service to autofile income tax return. Again, it has to be simplified. It has to be, individuals who we already receive a letter from the CRA inviting them to use a service. So we're not talking about non-filers here. We're talking about people that are used to file. So if it's so you can use this free automated phone service, but there are us also. I know it's a priority for there's a pilot project. That's the word.
There it is.
There's a pilot project coming on to try to do this, but we're not there yet.
Right.
It's something that ought to be developed further.
Yes, I'll snap my fingers and it'll just happen. There we go. Snapping, snapping. Perfect. Good. Okay, one last question before we go. I can see the role of the CRA in this.
Yeah.
Tell me about the role of the ombudsperson's office, because when I hear that word, I think you're the dude I call to complain to. So what is the role of your office in helping vulnerable Canadians?
It's more the systemic role that I am. I have a dual role, a role with individual complaints, of course, like you just said, but also to look at issues in a broader and a broader view. And for me, if there's non-filers, I have to understand why there is a non-filers and how can we reach them? So I looked already, we looked, the staff have been incredible. We've looked at everything that the CRA has done throughout the last few years and their action plan. And we're trying to fill, okay, so in terms of what now, what are you doing? What are your projections to do and to try to reach those vulnerable population in the years to come and try to figure out a way with non-for-profit organization, volunteer organization, to what's missing. So to listen to them, to listen because they know on the ground the needs of their own population. Sure. And so to be able to listen and be the link, be an agent of change, if I can be. So if when you're an ombudsman, if you're not an agent of change, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
So that's the focus.
Well, keep doing your job, François. And thank you for joining us today.
It's been fantastic.
Merci, François. François Boileau, Canada's taxpayers ombudsperson. He was here to talk about vulnerable Canadians and the importance of all Canadians, but in particular, those who can benefit from credits and programs for filing their taxes.
Coming up next, you've heard about the gig economy. Perhaps you work in the gig economy. So many pros. One con is taxes can be a bit more complicated. We're going to give you some tips on how to manage the filing of taxes if you've got a side hustle, if you're self-employed. Dean Paley is a chartered professional accountant. He's here to give us his advice.
I am also the money columnist for CBC Radio. Every Wednesday afternoon, we'll dig into topics relevant to you, relevant to your financial life, and many that are ripped from the headlines. So really relevant in the moment. Wednesday afternoons, CBC Radio.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
If you have a job, filing your taxes is pretty easy. A few forms, an online process, clickety-click, and you're done. But if you're recently self-employed or you recently started a side hustle, you may be learning that filing taxes takes a little bit more work and will in the future. Dean Paley is a chartered professional accountant in Burlington, Ontario, and he's here now to talk about some of the things you should know if you're going to have some self-employed income or maybe entirely self-employed income on your taxes. Hello, Dean.
Hello, Bruce.
What are some of the big things that you would highlight as being different about the process for people filing taxes when they have self-employed income, either entirely, like that's what they do, or it's a side hustle that augments a jobby job?
Well, when you have a job, as you said, you get your tax slip and you fill out your tax return and everything's good to go. When you're self-employed, you've got income to track. So you have to be able to keep records of who's paying you and for what work is being done. And then you have expenses that you may incur to earn that income. Those expenses could be automobile expenses, they could be office supplies, they could be meals for meetings, any range of those items.
Years ago, I left a job and I started freelancing. No tax was withdrawn at source and I spent every penny I made to pay the rent. This was a big problem when tax time arrived. What advice do you have for people so that they don't find themselves in this situation?
That's a great question. One of the things that they could do is to estimate what they are going to earn from their sales or from their self-employment income after expenses, if they can factor that in, and then make an estimate of the taxes. There's lots of websites out there that you can do a quick calculation to figure out what your tax liability would be, and then you can put that money off to the side. If you don't know what your expenses are going to be, a quick top line thing, particularly if you're in the gig economy, is to maybe just use your sales and estimate what your income or estimate what your taxes would be for a given period.
You have been doing this for a long time. Uber is a relatively new phenomenon, and really the gig economy in this way is new-ish. What have you learned that is really different in the last, call it 5 years, when this really became a part of the zeitgeist?
Well, we have seen a lot of new self-employed people come in to seek for our assistance with their taxes. One of the things that somebody perhaps might not be aware of is they might have to register for HST or GST. So driver, for example, they're required to, and Uber and Lyft and the ride-sharing services are pretty good about making sure that the drivers do register and collect the HST, or they collect it for them. But other ones, like if you're selling through Amazon, you may have to collect HST depending on the situation. And some other platforms as well, you may be registering even if you're below the $30,000 registration requirement.
And why even if? So I have that $30,000 figure in my mind. Why would you need to collect it if you were below that threshold?
Well, in the GST world, if you're a taxi, then you're required to register regardless of the limit.
Right.
So there are certain circumstances where you may be just simply required. The taxi's the big one, but you do have to keep your eye on it. And it is something definitely you'd want to look into to make sure you not get offside. It can get ugly if...
Yeah. What are some simple rules you would apply on what are deductible expenses? Because I'm sure you've seen some pretty outrageous examples of things that the CRA will simply not pass.
Things that typically would come up from the CRA's perspective would be excessive meals and entertainment expenses, or automobile expenses are another area that tend to be looked at. Generally speaking, when you're taking looking for expenses, the general rule is if you incurred the expense to generate the income, you can deduct it. If it was purely personal, then you can't deduct it. Things that I've seen, you know, you can't deduct your groceries, but you can deduct a portion of your home if you work there.
What are some of the best ways for people to track the expenses, track the income? There are a million and one apps out there. There's all sorts of tax filing software and bookkeeping software. What would you recommend people look for or look at when it comes to that part of it?
I would look for something that's simple and easy for them to use. Something that would track sales taxes if they need to, and something that makes it convenient to connect their payment systems, such as the bank account or a credit card, to track those expenses.
How do you think about taxes if your business doesn't make a profit? So there are some people who have self-employed income, but it's a passion project. They love to do it. They're doing magic at birthday parties. It's earned income. They know they need to, and they invoice for it. They know they need to be on side of the CRA, but it's not a lot of money, or it's no money at all.
If it's there's a difference between a hobby and an adventure in the nature of trade, which we refer to as a business. So if you're pursuing profit to make money, then definitely it's a business, and there would be more of a formal structure. If it's just something you're doing for fun and really you're just getting your costs reimbursed, it may just simply be a hobby, and it might not necessarily be a reportable item, although if you're ever uncertain, you're always best to report and claim the expenses against it rather than not.
What if it was something that really is a business? It's just going to take a while for it to become profitable, and you have to incur expenses to buy tools such that you can practice your trade or whatever. I'm making up a scenario here.
Yep.
How does the tax framework work in that circumstance?
If a business generates a loss in a particular year, that loss can be deducted against any other income for that year. If there's still a loss left over, it could be carried back 3 years, or it could be carried forward 10.
Many people listening to this will be like, okay, so I've got this side hustle, or I'm self-employed. At what point should I incorporate, and should I go provincial or federal? What would be your wisdom on those two questions?
On the incorporation, there's a couple of factors that you'd want to consider from a pure taxation point of view. If you have another job and you don't necessarily need the income from the side business and you want to save it, then incorporation may be a good venture for you. You could benefit from a low tax rate. In Ontario, that's about 12.2% right now, which is a deferral. If you have a considerable amount of income and you're trying to survive off of the profit, and you are finding that you have accumulated savings, then that might be a point to which you might want to consider incorporation. On a pure numbers basis, around $40,000 of profit is somewhat of a break-even point between combined personal and corporate taxes and earning through self-employment as a sole proprietor.
Just before we go, I want to ask the question about family members, because if you're self-employed, you may have a spouse doing a part of that work. You may want to pay that spouse an hourly wage or some sort of amount to compensate them for that work. What are some watchouts on involving family on the self-employed side?
When you have family members, you want to make sure that you're paying them a wage that you would pay an independent third party. You have to be careful not to pay more than what you would pay somebody else to do the same work. You wouldn't want to pay your spouse $500 an hour to do administrative work that you would pay somebody else $30 an hour to do. That would be the other thing you'd want to do is make sure that you track the time, what was done.
Right. So there's a fair amount of rigor on this front. You can't just make it up.
Yeah, correct. You cannot make it up.
Interesting. Dean, thank you for your time today.
No problem. It's nice to meet you.
Dean Paley is a chartered professional accountant in Burlington, Ontario, and he was here to talk about some of the subtleties on prepping to file your taxes if you are self-employed or if you've got a side hustle going, which many Canadians now do. That's it for our best of episode. We focused exclusively today on taxes and covered a whole bunch of different angles to help you figure out what to do if you need to make a complaint, how to pay less, how to make sure you pay enough, et cetera, et cetera. A shout out to our sponsor today, Credit Canada, first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. If you have comments for us, if you have story ideas for us, if you have any reason that you would like to be in touch, please do so. Our email address is ask@moolala.ca. And if you'd prefer to engage on social media, Twitter @BruceSellery, spelled SELLERY, or Bruce Sellery Moolala on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening in, and have a great day.